At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where performance is driven by original fundamental research on a global scale. This is Putnam Today, produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Sell in May and go away, so the stock market saying goes. And on this first day of June, you may wish you had to avoid the gloom that settled over Wall Street. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Barron's Magazine, providing market ideas and insights to help readers manage their investments and protect their financial well-being, online at barrons.com. And by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the internet. Reputation.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday. It is the first day of June. We exited May with news of a double dip in housing prices. Today, we started the new month with more dispiriting economic figures. ADP, the payroll giant, said private employers added just 38,000 jobs last month. And the latest evidence from manufacturers also suggests the recovery may already have peaked. Too little and far too soon. Wall Street brought a swift and harsh end to a four-day rally as the phrase double dip starts to sneak back into the broader economy. Marketplace's Jeff Horwich has our report.
You know what they say about the month of May? In like a lion, out like a double dip recession. Any way you slice it, the U.S. looks like an economy once again losing momentum. Fewer new jobs, slower manufacturing growth, less confident consumers. Officially, it takes 6 months of falling national income, GDP, to declare a recession. We don't have that, but Michael Pento, senior economist at Euro Pacific Capital, has seen enough.
The economy's headed for a double dip. You look at housing, you look at GDP, if you look at initial claims, we are definitely in a recession. A recession, by the way, that never really ended.
Pento actually kind of welcomes the double dip. He sees it like a painful do-over, a chance to fix the problems that brought the economy down in the first place.
The only viable solution is to allow home prices to fall to a level that's supported by a free market. We have to get the consumer's balance sheet in order. We have to get the government's balance sheet in order.
Some of today's ammo for the double-dip doomsayers came from the Institute for Supply Management, which posted a slowdown in U.S. manufacturing growth. But ISM survey chair Brad Holcomb says the pessimists should hold their fire.
Companies are sort of taking their foot off the accelerator a bit here. It's certainly something for us to watch over the next couple of months, but, you know, 1 month change of this nature does not constitute a trend.
Looking over the whole first part of the year, the trends Holcomb does see include the best run of manufacturing job growth in 38 years. Similarly, viewing the broader economy with a wider lens paints a brighter picture. But one rough month of May seems to have put the double dip back on the menu. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
Soccer's world governing body has a new president, same as the old president. Swiss national Sepp Blatter has run FIFA for more than 12 years and was the only candidate in today's election. And he's got some fancy footwork to do to convince fans that he's going to fix the organization. FIFA is at the center of a global scandal over charges of rampant corruption within its ranks. Christopher Wirth has more from London.
For months, Sepp Blatter has been heavily criticized after allegations that FIFA officials took bribes as they decided which countries get to host the World Cup. Germany wants an investigation into the selection process that saw the U.S. lose out to Qatar for the tournament in 2022. But after winning 90% of the vote today, Blatter sounded like a calm father reassuring a dysfunctional family.
We are going forward. We are happy. We can be happy. We have solutions. But we have to have acts, and now we are going to act.
One such action, Blatter has promised to shift the power of awarding the World Cup from the secretive inner circle of FIFA's executive committee to all of its 208 national members. And he says going forward, FIFA will have a zero-tolerance policy towards bribery. But is that enough?
I don't think things are going to get a whole lot better.
Alan Sanderson is a sports economist at the University of Chicago.
You've got an organization that is reasonably corrupt, and one person, you know, running for re-election. What's to suggest there's going to be any significant change?
Blatter's rival for the presidency withdrew last week. He was accused of exchanging cash for votes. England, a powerful voice in world soccer, had wanted today's election to be postponed until allegations of wrongdoing could be investigated further, but it didn't get its way. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
On Wall Street, the worst percentage day since last August. We'll have details when we do the numbers. President Obama met with congressional Republicans at the White House today. The agenda? Coming to an agreement on the government's ability to borrow. Yes, the debt ceiling. The big sticking point, of course, is whether spending cuts will be attached to that legislation. But commentator Robert Reich wants another policy topic front and center. And he says it, too, has a lot to do with your taxpayer dollars.
President Obama is mulling an executive order requiring that big government contractors disclose their political spending. He should stop their political spending altogether. Take Lockheed Martin, the nation's largest contractor. The company has received nearly $20 billion in federal contracts so far this year. It's already spent more than $4 million lobbying Congress. Lockheed has also been spending more than $3 million a year on political contributions to members of Congress that vote its way, and an undisclosed amount to the Aerospace Industries Association to lobby for a bigger defense budget. But wait a minute. You and I and other taxpayers are Lockheed's biggest customer. As such, we are financing this political activity. It's one of the most insidious conflicts of interest in American politics. And Lockheed is hardly unique. The 10 biggest government contractors are all defense contractors. Every one of them gets most of its revenues from the federal government. And everyone uses a portion of that money to lobby for even more defense contracts. That's one reason the defense procurement budget keeps growing like Topsy. Next year's expected drawdown of troops from Afghanistan and Iraq was supposed to save money, but Lockheed and other giant defense contractors have made sure all anticipated savings will go to new weapon systems. In the wake of the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United, extending First Amendment rights to corporations, there's no limit on what Lockheed and other defense contractors can spend on politics. This is nonsense. It's our money. Over a half century ago, President Dwight Eisenhower warned of the dangers of an unbridled military-industrial complex, as he called it. It's now a military-industrial-congressional complex, and after Citizens United, it's more unbridled than ever. The president should issue his executive order requiring government contractors disclose their political contributions, but he should go further and ban political activities by all corporations getting more than half their revenues from the federal government.
Robert Reich served as Secretary of Labor under President Clinton. His most recent book is Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. David Frum is up in the rotation next week. Send us your comments sometime before that, please. Go to marketplace.org and click on Contact. Ever feel like you're slaving away and getting no recognition for it at all? Well, that's how nature feels. Turns out the environment is doing all sorts of things for us, and in return, we plow it up and tear it down. Reporter Sabri Benashour of station WAMU in Washington visited a place where nature is actually getting a paycheck for all its work.
Here in central Virginia, the Blue Ridge Mountains are beginning to turn green with buds as spring creeps up the hillsides. Richard Hudson stands in a pasture in the valley below. His family has farmed this land for almost 200 years.
I'm the sixth generation of my family to own this farm, and there have been livestock here since the beginning.
In this pasture, though, the cows have been kicked out. This pasture will become a forest.
1,500 pine trees are going to be planted in there.
And the tree planting is scheduled to happen in about 2 weeks, so looking forward to that.
Virginia's Department of Forestry is paying Hudson about $1,000 an acre to take his land out of production and return it to forest.
I've signed an agreement to maintain this to the specifications that they require for 20 years.
But this isn't just money for trees. This is money for what trees do.
The forest cleans water.
David Powell is a forester with Virginia's Department of Forestry. He says when you look at a forest just sitting there, it's actually doing stuff for you.
Forests are very good at filtering out and preventing erosion and sedimentation. It also helps clean up the air.
This is what's called an ecosystem service, when nature does stuff for people. The trouble is, even though people benefit from nature just doing its thing, nobody gets paid for letting nature do its thing. Actually, they get paid to do the opposite. Forests get cleared, roots dug up, benefits gone. That's just the markety world we live in. So Virginia's forestry department wants to pay for the benefit and maybe get consumers to do so too later down the road. Buck Klein is director of forest land conservation with Virginia's Department of Forestry.
What we're doing is developing a process to link rural landowners with the users of water, which represents the urban-suburban population.
Using models, they'll quantify the benefit of a forest to a water source, wrap it up, and put a price tag on it and make it a product. But who pays? How much? And for what? That's a challenge with ecosystem services. But the general idea, putting a value on what nature does for humans, is becoming more popular around the world, says Craig Hansen with the World Resources Institute.
Decision makers are recognizing that ecosystems are an often overlooked underpinning of national economic development.
He points to Costa Rica, where a hydroelectric plant actually does pay landowners to plant trees so its dam doesn't get clogged with mud, or Belize, where a cargo ship was fined for destroying a reef based on how much that reef contributed to the economy. This concept is a new approach to conservation.
For decades, we've been talking about saving nature for nature's sake, and that's worked to some degree. We have a lot of protected areas around the planet, etc., but there are limits. For a lot of governments and a lot of people, a lot of companies, that's not a convincing argument.
And so, he says, the concept of an ecosystem service is an economic argument to save nature for people's sake. In Washington, D.C., I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Coming up, why discounted cigarettes on military bases might do more harm than good.
If you look at the direct medical costs, the indirect costs, and the cost of pain and suffering, it's substantial.
But first, let's do the numbers. 2 days of bad economic news proved too much for investors. The Dow sank 279 points, 2.2%, to close at 12,290. It was the big board's steepest percentage drop since last August. The Nasdaq surrendered 66 points, 2.3%, to finish at 2769, and the S&P 500 lost 30 points, 2.25%, to end the day at 1314. Those weak economic figures we told you about earlier hit a broad swath of blue chips. Construction equipment maker Caterpillar deconstructed 4.33%. Alcoa lost about the same. And Boeing descended more than 3% amid concerns of slowing global growth. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell below 3% for the first time this year, down to 2.94%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rates CD as well as an online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. And by Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet. What does Tier 1 Capital have in common with a wedding cake? Visit the Marketplace whiteboard to find out. Our videos demystify finance and economics. Just go to our website, marketplace.org.
From on the Marketplace State Book, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. In Washington, the Labor Department releases its revised productivity and cost report for the first quarter. Do a little shopping over the long Memorial Day weekend? Chain stores report sales for May. And tune into ESPN to improve your vocabulary. The Scripps National Spelling Bee Finals air tomorrow. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday, so let's have a look at the inbox.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
Our segment that seemed to get the most responses this past week sought to answer the question, is college worth it? Tech reporter Steve Henn and education correspondent Amy Scott squared off on venture capitalist Peter Thiel's $100,000 scholarships for high school entrepreneurs. That was so they don't have to spend their time getting bachelor's degrees. Here are just a handful of your thoughts on the question.
I have to say that students, by and large, come a long way during their college education. I have seen people who would otherwise not be able to have an education be able to come and really be transformed, and have experienced people from other demographics and a learning environment.
College is simply a degree factory, a high-priced stay-away camp for four or more years, in which the vast majority of people learn nothing and don't want to either. Classes are dumbed down to try to keep the GPA of the school up. And most people don't work hard because they have the impression that a college degree is a golden ticket, and it's not.
Any family would be proud to say their student attended Stanford, Wellesley, or Harvard. However, if parents are borrowing money against their homes, emptying retirement accounts, or the student is taking out $100,000 in loans for an undergraduate degree, you have to decide whether or not that makes good financial sense.
Those voices came from Robin Richeson, an artist and college professor at Cal State Long Beach, Carson Sprock, an economics and math major at University of California, Santa Cruz, and Chandra Summers of Las Vegas, a mother of three sons, two of whom are in college now. Before we wrap up, one small correction. In yesterday's story about John Bryson, the new nominee to head the Commerce Department, we mentioned he was the founder of the Natural Resources Defense Council. Well, that's what it said on the page in front of me. But the words out of my mouth were National Resources Defense Council. It is natural. You can send us your thoughts and corrections at marketplace.org and leave your own by clicking on the link that says Contact. You can also find links to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Earlier today, Nokia's stock price shot for the sky on rumors that the phone maker was about to sell its smartphone division to Microsoft. The rumor quickly died, and Nokia, which cut its revenue projections drastically yesterday, headed straight back to the basement. It's just the latest step in a downward spiral. Marketplace's Steve Henn has that story.
Even before Nokia could deny it, many analysts were calling the idea of a possible buyout bogus.
I think the Microsoft buyout round was preposterous.
Ben Wood is at CSS Insight. He says for the past 2 years at least, Nokia's been getting pummeled. Its stock price has lost more than half its value.
This situation that Nokia finds itself in was almost inconceivable, you know, just a few years ago.
Charles Galvin's a mobile analyst at Forrester Research. He says Nokia's market share is being devoured by the competition.
It's clear that all of Nokia's competitors are eyeing Nokia's customers, and there may be even a little bit of drool hanging out of their mouth as they're eyeing them.
Apple redefined the smartphone in 2007. Then Google's Android quickly copied the vision. Nokia was flat-footed. Now it's abandoning its own smartphone operating system called Symbian, and it announced in February it would begin building phones running Microsoft software instead. But
they made one major strategic misstep, which was they put up a graphic which showed a graph of the Symbian volumes tapering to nothing.
Symbian became a dead system walking. And now Nokia's got a phone no one wants to buy or build apps for. And it will be months before the first Windows phone hits the market. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Brown tobacco leaves are costing the military a lot of green. The Department of Defense spends more than $1.5 billion of taxpayer money each year on tobacco-related expenses. Members of the armed forces are 1.5 times more likely to smoke than civilians are. But an investigation by reporter Sally Herships shows the military regularly fails to comply with its own tobacco pricing restrictions. It sells millions of dollars of cigarettes, cigars, and chewing tobacco at prices lower than the law allows. Here's Sally.
Timothy Sterlachini is 40. He's got 2 kids and lives in Virginia. And he chews tobacco.
And how long have you been chewing?
For 14 years. I call it crack in a can.
Now, Sterlachini is a self-employed contractor, but he's been a Marine for 21 years. In 2003, he was a sergeant, getting ready to drive into the Battle of Nasiriyah, one of the bloodiest in the Iraq War. About 75 feet away from him was a Humvee that had made it out of Nasiriyah.
Looked like they had taken 5 5-gallon buckets of blood and just thrown it all inside the vehicle and all around the vehicle.
Sterlachini was freaked out. He radioed his buddy 12 vehicles back.
Buckeye, this is Zucchini. I need to speak to Echo 6 Delta. And I was like, Donahue, make sure that you take care of what you're supposed to take care of. Basically, our pact was either one of us didn't make it back, that we were supposed to take care of each other's children.
To say being in the military is stressful would be an extreme understatement. According to the Department of Defense, service members say they use tobacco to relieve stress and boredom. Sterlachini says chewing tobacco is especially popular with Marines. But when it comes to cigarettes, almost 40% of smokers in the military say they started after joining. It could be because they're getting their tobacco so cheap. Tobacco sold on bases is supposed to be 5% cheaper than the lowest local price. But that's not what I found when I visited Fort Hamilton in Brooklyn recently.
And from now through April 7th, will you use your military star card on any...
New York has the highest excise tax in the country. So outside the base, a pack of Marlboro Red sells for $11 or $12. That means the price inside should be around $10.50. But when I checked...
So how much are the Marlboro Reds?
$8.80.
That's a 20% discount, not the 5% required by the Department of Defense. When I first called Fort Hamilton in December, packs were selling for nearly 50% off. I called over 100 Army and Air Force bases all over the country and the civilian stores surrounding them, and I found unusually low discounts at bases in more than a dozen states. Keith Haddock was a major in the Air Force. Now he studies tobacco's impact on the military at the National Development and Research Institute. Haddock says those big discounts on tobacco lead to big costs for taxpayers.
If you look at all the costs, they're pretty staggering. If you look at the direct medical costs, the indirect costs, and the costs of pain and suffering, it's substantial.
Take the Veterans Administration. In 2008, the VA spent over $5 billion to treat chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, a condition which 80% of the time comes from smoking. But the most puzzling aspect of the military's discount on tobacco may be what Haddock says is its effect on what's called readiness, a troop's ability to be ready to go at a moment's notice to fight and win wars, which is really the whole point.
If you just look at the things that smoking decreases, it decreases a military member's fitness, decreases fine motor coordination, stamina, even decreases wound healing.
So why would the military discount something that makes its troops less effective? A lot of the service members I talked to, like Timothy Sterlachini, said when it's time for combat, tobacco helps reduce their stress. The brand of chewing tobacco Sterlachini uses is called Kodiak.
During this battle, do you have Kodiak with you?
Yes.
And what point does it go in your mouth?
It never left.
The whole thing about stress relief and smoking is one big illusion.
Dr. Benjamin Gonzalez was in the Air Force and Army for 24 years. He was chief of the trauma center in Baghdad at the beginning of the Iraq War. Now he runs his own medical center in Maryland. Gonzalez says using tobacco only reduces the stress of addiction.
In the same way that heroin alleviates stress in a heroin addict.
Gonzalez says smoking doesn't reduce stress. Instead, it causes it. He says he doesn't want to take away tobacco from anyone on the front line who needs their fix, but it would be worthwhile to keep them from picking up a can of chew or a pack of cigarettes in the first place. Gonzalez says the relationship between pricing and tobacco use is well documented.
If it's cheaper, they're going to smoke more. Period.
The more cigarettes smoked, the higher the cost, the larger the bill to the taxpayer, and the greater the number of sick service members. Which brings us back to the issue of tobacco pricing on military bases. Lieutenant Colonel Schrader works for the Army and Air Force Exchange Service.
How does the military set prices for tobacco?
Okay, what we do is we have local market pricing coordinators.
The pricing coordinators Schrader's talking about are the people whose job it is to help set prices for tobacco at the bases.
We look at gas stations. We look at convenience stores. We look at major retailers.
Which is what they're supposed to do. But it turns out they also look at stores on other military bases. That would mean, say, the Army taking a tobacco price from the Coast Guard, which is already discounted, and discounting on top of that. So I asked Schrader, is this going to change? But I never could get a straight answer.
The Coast Guard exchange prices have been reviewed, and at those co-located areas in the past, we are now working cooperatively with all co-located exchange services to ensure that our pricing is using the same commercial competitors that they are.
I asked six different times if the Army and Air Force would stop using other bases to set prices, but I got the same evasive response each time, which was basically the answer to a whole different question. I did manage to find out one thing. One of the reasons prices at the base in Brooklyn are so cheap is because they've been set based on prices at a so-called local store, which is 5 hours away at an Indian reservation in Oneida, New York. Some other bases set prices the same way, but Schrader says the Army and Air Force Exchange has recently decided this isn't a good system, and prices at the base in Brooklyn are on their way up. And that could mean better health for our military and a smaller tax bill for everyone. In Brooklyn, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
To find out why the military would make more money if it raised prices, go to marketplace.org, where you will also find an interactive map of military bases selling underpriced tobacco.
Marketplace is supported by Cargill, working with customers around the world to connect ideas to opportunities across food, agriculture, finance, and industry. Information at Cargill.com. By Manta, connecting millions of small business owners with new customers every day. On the web at Manta.com. And by Putnam Investments, focused on finding opportunities one stock at a time. On the web at Putnam.com/large cap equity. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
And this final note, we all know that illegal file sharing online, especially of the music kind, can get you in trouble. Not to mention it hurts the bottom line of the folks whose music you're enjoying. But if you thought it was still okay to, maybe use your cousin's password to listen to on a file sharing service like Netflix or Rhapsody, well, don't do it in Tennessee. State lawmakers there just passed a bill making that illegal, too. It's an extension of the law against leaving a restaurant without paying or stealing a cable TV signal. The bill is now on the governor's desk. And that is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. Today, the Dow sank 279 points, 2.2%. The Nasdaq surrendered 66 points, 2.33%. And the S&P 500 lost 30 points, 2.3%. Vahan Baladuni, Ravi Karman, Stephen Colon, Bradford Craig, Jeff Peters, and Charlton Thorpe engineer the program for us. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. Tomorrow on this program, we catch up with Kai in China. He sent us this latest dispatch from his trip. Is the golden age of the Wild East in the past? Is it now or in the future?
One of the guys said, would you rather have been here 20 years ago till now or now in 20 years from now?
Oh, good question.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
And I was the only one who said, no, now, because now is when it's real.
Get more on his blog at marketplace.org. I'm Tess Vigeland. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.